Frank Pavone, the head of Priests for Life, has been dismissed from the clerical state by the Vatican. What does this mean? Why would they do that? And what are the implications of this? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sam, your host, the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, please smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, let other people know about it. Don't bother hitting the notification button because you have a life outside of the internet. Also, I just want to encourage people to follow us on social media. We're on the various social media platforms, all the major ones and even some of the minor ones. At Crisis Mag is our typical handle, so at Crisis Mag. Okay, so we're going to talk about the topic that all Catholics today are talking about and have been talking about since Saturday, and that is Father Frank Pavone, who is the head of Priests for Life. And before I get started, I just want to address the first issue, which is more of a almost grammatical type issue. It's an important issue, whether or not to call him Father Frank Pavone or Frank Pavone. I actually just called him Father earlier, just a couple of seconds ago, out of habit. I wrote an article about this case, and in there, I call him just Frank Pavone. And the reason this matters is what it has to do with his dismissal from the clerical state, his laicization. Basically, when a priest is removed from the clerical state, he no longer is to be called father, or if he's a bishop, your excellency, or whatever the case may be. For example, Theodore McCarrick, who is laicized, he's not called Cardinal McCarrick anymore. He's just called Theodore McCarrick. You lose that right to have the title of father or other ecclesial title once that happens. And some people are still calling him father because they don't recognize the action by the Vatican, and I understand that. I personally do recognize it. Now, somebody else told me that because it was not delivered to him, it doesn't really go into effect, even though the date of it was back in November. And that might be true. Canonically, that might be true. I don't know. Personally, I think it's a done deal. It's happened. And so I've been just calling him Pavone, Frank Pavone, whatever the case may be. That's not a statement of disrespect towards him or for his work. Also, it's something to be noted. I think most Catholics understand this, but maybe not all. A priest, an ordained priest, is a priest forever. Theodore McCarrick is still a priest. He did not lose that indelible sign, seal he received at his ordination. When he dies, he will be judged as a priest. He'll be a priest forever. And same thing with Pavone. He is a priest. Regardless of what his status is, he's always going to be a priest. Now, when you're dismissed from the clerical state, however, you cannot publicly present yourself as a priest. You're not called father. You can't celebrate the sacraments publicly, things like that. You can, for example, hear a confession in an emergency. If somebody's dying, let's say he's driving up on the road and somebody's dying, he can't hear that person's confession in that emergency. But so just to be clear, it's not saying that Pavone or McCarrick aren't priests anymore. And I don't want to associate those two as any way equal. McCarrick was a monster. Pavone absolutely is not. But anyway, just to address that, how we're going to address him. I understand people still call him father. I personally am just calling him Frank Pavone or Pavone, Mr. Pavone, whatever the case may be. If the Vatican one day overturns this, which I think is possible, then obviously we can go back to just calling him father. So basically, though, I have an article up at Crisis today, The Sad Case of Frank Pavone. I link to it in the show notes. I encourage people to read it. I go through a bit of the history of how we got to this point, because it's not like all of a sudden out of the blue, the Vatican just decided, hey, let's laicize this random priest in America. No, that's not how it happened. There was a history behind it. A history of battles between Pavone and the church hierarchy, particularly with his bishop in Amarillo, Texas, Bishop Zurich. And it led to this sad, and I think the word sad is the right word. And sad's not blaming one person or another. It's just simply saying it's a sad situation. I think a lot of blame does go in a certain direction, and that's towards Rome. But it's the fact of the matter is it's a sad situation. And so I encourage you to read that to get a little bit of the situation, what happened. Essentially, the most important things is that Pavone was ordained a priest by Cardinal John O'Connor back in 1988. As a priest of the Archdiocese of New York. In 1993, he asked and was given permission to do full-time pro-life missionary work. It's interesting, 1993, that was the year I was going around getting arrested. I very much remember Pavone coming out and starting to do pro-life work and things like that back then. And he did great work. He has done great work and continues to do great work in the pro-life front in a lot of ways. So anyway, O'Connor gave him permission to do full-time work. Now, here is probably what I think is the crux of the issue. I bring up my article, and that is how Pavone perceived this work, this pro-life work. He perceives it as a vocation. In fact, just today, or maybe it was last night, he tweeted that he has a twofold vocation, and that is to the priesthood and to pro-life ministry. And so he perceives this as a vocation to him, not a job, not an assignment, not a ministry even, but a vocation. And that's a very important point that I think we need to be very clear about, because vocation has a very specific meaning in Catholic theology. It basically points to the priesthood, the religious life, and the married life, not the single life for people who want to act like the single life is a vocation. It's not. You can be holy, you can be a saint as a single person, but that's not a vocation. But that vocation is a calling from God, and that vocation trumps everything in a certain sense. What do I mean by that? For example, I have a vocation, and that is to be a husband, be a father, the married life. That's my vocation. If my job, which is editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine, if my job were to somehow harm my vocation, I need to find another job. My job does not come before my vocation. My vocation always comes first. And likewise for a priest has multiple, has many assignments in their life. A diocesan priest will be shuffled between parishes. It happens all the time. A priest, a religious priest, a priest in the religious life has different assignments as well, usually not necessarily at parishes, but at different ministries. A priest might have an assignment to be the chaplain at a hospital, for example. These are all assignments. And they're a part of their vocation, a part of living out their vocation, but they're not equivalent to. The vocation always comes first. And in the minds of Pavone's superiors, it's clear that they saw his pro-life work as an assignment. Now, we can't speak for O'Connor, what he thought, because he's dead now. He never made a comment on it. But his other superiors, so Cardinal Egan of New York, Bishop Yanta, I think his name was, of Amarillo, Bishop Zurich of Amarillo, saw it as an assignment. And so because of that, they felt like they had the right to change his assignment, just like they can for any priest. Now, yes, there are some canonical rules about how priests are assigned and whether or not you can change their assignments, things like that, and a priest's ability to appeal assignments up the ladder, up the Rome. All those things exist. But ultimately, in the vast majority of cases, a bishop can say to a priest, listen, you're at this parish, I need you to move to this parish. And the priest has to obey that, essentially, in the vast majority of cases. Because the priest, when he's ordained, the diocesan priest, when he's ordained, takes and makes a promise of obedience to the bishop and all the successors of that bishop. And a very common case of that obedience is priestly assignments. Now, yes, priests can argue against that, can try to say, no, I don't really want to go there. Here are my reasons. He can push back. All those things are possible. But ultimately, like I said, in the vast majority of cases, if a bishop says, go here, the priest goes there. That is part of his vocation, in fact, is to do that, is to obey his superior when he gives him a legitimate command like that. This is an essential part of Catholicism. This isn't like some new hyper-papalist idea. This isn't some modern, just like post-Council of Trent Jesuit idea of obedience. I mean, old Jesuits, not new Jesuits. This is something that has always been the case in Catholic theology. And so when Bishop Zurich of Amarillo argued, okay, you need to have a parish assignment instead of pro-life ministry, and Pavone refused, in Zurich's mind, that is a defiance of legitimate authority. And apparently in the eyes of the Vatican, that is also the case, because one of the things they noted when they announced, when the Apostolic Nuncio in the United States announced that he was dismissed from the clerical state, It said that, let me get the right language. Where does it say that? Basically, it stated one of the reasons was persistent disobedience of the lawful instructions of his diocesan bishop. Persistent disobedience of lawful instruction of his diocesan bishop. That is a violation of canonical rules, and it's something that a priest should not do. And so whether or not he should be laicized for it, that's another question we'll get into in a minute. But the point is that that's clearly how both Bishop Zurich of Amarillo and the Vatican see it, is that he was having persistent disobedience of his legitimate authority. Now, and so we've gotten to this point where the second most extreme thing that could happen to him happened. Obviously, the most extreme is excommunication. And there's actually, it's possible that if he refuses to stop presenting himself as a priest, in other words, if he continues to wear clerics, if he says mass publicly, if he continues to call himself Father Frank Pavone, he could get excommunicated, which is the harshest penalty, obviously, the church has. Now, so we're at this sad point. Now, another thing I want to acknowledge before I really get into it is there are some questions. Everything is not completely clear. I think we have a lot of information, but we don't have all the information. For example, Pavone, I believe, has said that he was willing to take a parish assignment from Zurich, I think back in 2017 or something like that. And basically at that point, Zurich was like, no, it's too little, too late. Now, that may be true. It's a little bit hard to reconcile that, though, with Pavone's constant and persistent statements that all he's wanted is to work full-time in pro-life ministry. That's his one requirement. Basically, he just wants to work in full-time ministry. And his idea that it's a vocation to do that, that's all he wants. And so if he's really willing to work in parish life, yet he says it's a vocation, the one thing he wants, I'm not quite sure how that adds up, but maybe it does. But that's one thing. Also, a friend of Father Pavone's reached out to me and said that he was willing to work in parish life under Egan. I didn't gain more information about it other than that, but that is possible. Another thing that's of some question for a number of years now has been, where is Pavone incardinated? Incardinated means where is he officially, what diocese is he officially part of? It's known that he was part of New York from the time he was ordained in 1988 until the early 2000s, I think around 2006 or so, 2005, 2006, he then was transferred. He transferred his incarnation to Amarillo, Texas, where he had a friendly bishop. And he, at that point, decided he was going to start a religious order, a pro-life religious order, which that didn't pan out. But Amarillo got a new diocesan bishop, Patrick Zurich, and almost immediately ran into conflict between Pavone and Zurich. And there's a whole story about how in 2011, Zurich said he was suspended, even though he really wasn't. But he basically said that he told Pavone to come back to Amarillo, live in the diocese, because Pavone was actually living in Amarillo, or at least he moved out later. But he said, live in the diocese and become a parochial vicar at a parish. And Pavone refused to do that at that point. And then he ended up moving to Florida. And then there was some discussion, like Pavone at some point said he was going to be incarnated, transferred to the Diocese of Colorado Springs under the late Michael Sheridan. But Colorado Springs says that's not the case. And there was a question, sometimes it was noted that he was incarnated at an unknown diocese after Amarillo, but the Pillar reported today, or maybe it was last night, that he is incarnated at Amarillo. They confirm that he is still part of the Amarillo diocese, which makes statements that he's been transferred to an unknown diocese in the past, I think he's made himself, or Colorado Springs, it frankly questions the veracity of those statements. So maybe they're true. I don't know. The point is, though, it sounds like he is incarnated in Amarillo, Texas, under Bishop Zurich. So that is where he is. Also, one thing that's not known that much, a friend of Pavone, again, told me this, is that when Pavone has dust-ups with Zurich over the years, he appealed to the Vatican, and the Vatican consistently over the years did vindicate Pavone over Zurich, and basically saying, yeah, Zurich did not follow procedures or whatever the case may be. But obviously, they're not doing that now. So I don't know what's going on. Another big question I have in this whole mess is the whole thing that when this story was broke by Catholic News Agency on Saturday, Pavone said that's the first he'd heard about it. If that's true, that's unbelievable. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying he made it up, but I'm just saying, though, if it is true, it's inconceivable. You may all use the Princess Bride word. Because how can you laicize as a priest, tell him he can no longer present himself publicly as a priest without actually telling him that? That makes no sense whatsoever. So it could be Vatican incompetence. It could be cowardice. They just didn't want to. It could be some them being deceptive in some way. It also could be Pavone has stated that his advisors have told him not to communicate with Zurich anymore for a while now. It's possible they tried to tell him, but they just weren't able to. I mean, I don't know. I guess everybody, you could just contact him on Twitter or something like that. I don't know. Maybe it got lost in the mail. I mean, just a weird situation there. So now this whole situation has brought up a lot of emotions. I've gotten a lot of emails and responses to my article today already. A lot of them supportive, more than I thought, to be honest. A lot of people said they appreciated my take on it. So there have been emotions. Here's like, I'm going to show a couple emails here I got about this. Unsubscribe me now in the all caps. This bit piece on Father Frank is blasphemous. Canon law my ass. The Pope is an ass. Father Frank is doing God's work. Sent from my iPhone. I mean, that obviously, that's a troublesome email. That if any Catholic thinks that's a legitimate way to look at this, I feel sorry for you. You don't understand some basics of Catholicism to write that. That, you know, somehow my take on it was blasphemous. And also canon law, my ass. How can you say that? Canon law is important. Now, I'm not saying canon law was followed necessarily, but canon law is important. Otherwise, we're just Protestantism. It's chaos. And obviously calling the Pope a curse word isn't exactly appropriate either for a Catholic, no matter how the Pope works. I don't see how that's respectful of the office. Another email I got was, your stand on Father Pavone is wrong, all caps on Father and wrong. I am unsubscribing from your propaganda-infested site. Obedience to the sodomite-infested USCCB and Francis is pure evil. Crisis Mag is a rag. I do appreciate the rhyming at the end there. I mean, we're going to talk about obedience in a minute because that's a key point here. Obedience to the sodomite-infested USCCB and Francis is pure evil. That's not exactly true. There's some obedience that is evil. There's some obedience that's not evil. So I think we have to look at that more closely here in a minute. So the point of me showing you these is to show, yeah, I get that Catholics are upset. And I just want to state before I give any other opinions on this, I want to state something very clear. Of course, this decision by the Vatican is politicized. Of course, it comes out of a corrupt Vatican. Of course, it's extremely hypocritical for the Vatican to be laicizing Father Pavone, Frank Pavone, whatever you want to call him, while Father Martin runs around, Father James Martin runs around encouraging sodomy, encouraging homosexuality, and he's not only not disciplined, but he's endorsed by the Pope. Of course this is awful. And how can the Vatican say they're going to laicize Frank Pavone for blasphemous actions when they had Pachamama set up on the Vatican grounds for veneration? I mean, if that's not blasphemous, if that's not sacrilege, what is? Now we care about blasphemy. So I just want to make that clear, that clearly there's no question, and there should be no question in anybody, any right-minded person's mind, that what they did was terrible. And the way they handled it obviously is terrible if they didn't even tell him. And also, it's highly likely that Bishop Zurich, I don't know much about Bishop Zurich, but he probably is like most bishops. It's highly likely that he just didn't like Pavone's work and he wanted to shut it down. All these things are true. And nothing I say after this in any way should diminish the truth of that. I'm not all arguing how terrible the way the Vatican and Bishop Zurich have handled this have been over the years. That being said, what matters for us who are trying to be faithful Catholics isn't the injustice done, the corruption, or the politicalization. It is the response. What is the response we have? What is the response of Pavone? What is the response of us as Catholics, as pro-life Catholics who know about the corruption going on in the church today? What's our response? That's what matters to us, to me at least. That's what matters. It should matter to you. Your response is what's going to decide whether or not you're a faithful disciple of Jesus Christ. Not what you tweet about, not what you write about, not what you podcast about it, but your response to it. And so here's something that we need to remember. Just because the Vatican is corrupt and just because it is bad does not mean that every decision it makes has to be must be rejected, that every decision it makes we must resist, or that anybody who is in the crosshairs of the Vatican is pure as the driven snow. Those two things aren't equivalent. This is a very common thing that people do today. It's like, okay, Trump versus Biden. Biden's obviously awful. That means Trump is perfect. No, that's not how it works. Trump versus Clinton, the same thing. We see this in politics all the time, but we see it in the church as well. That, okay, the USCCB has so many problems, it's hard to even list them all. It would be impossible to list them all. It doesn't mean every single thing they do is evil. It doesn't mean every single decision they make has to be resisted. And so, and likewise, people they go against aren't necessarily perfect either. Our Lord told us that we need to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. And what that means is that when we encounter, one of the things it means is when we encounter persecution, particularly persecution from within, we have to be very wise about how we handle it. We have to use prudence. I know that's a curse word in some circles these days, but the fact is we do have to use prudence. We have to decide, okay, we're innocent as doves, meaning we don't do anything wrong. We follow our Lord's commands. We follow the legitimate commands of church authorities. So we're innocent as doves. We're also wise as serpents. We recognize, okay, what's the best way to advance the kingdom of God in the face of corrupt church leaders? What's the best way that we can actually address these issues in a way that will be the most successful? These things we have to choose our battles wisely. And so I do think, and I'll just say it, I think that Pavone hasn't always done that. He hasn't always chosen his battles wisely. And he hasn't always been innocent of doves. Now, I get all of us are fallen. We all make mistakes. I mean, Pavone himself has admitted that. That, like, for example, when he said GD against somebody, he said, yeah, I was out of anger. He went to confession. And in my mind then, you know, I assume he publicly said this as well. If he publicly, you know, said the thing he said, I'm not going to say it, obviously, on the podcast. And then he later repented and apologized. Then it's over. Forgiveness. Yes, absolutely. But I think in other ways, though, he hasn't been innocent as a dove. And so these things have to be addressed. And we have to acknowledge that. Also, I want to mention before I talk about the idea of obedience and why that's important in this situation is I have some good friends who are definitely taking a little bit of a different take on this. You know, Kennedy Hall, Taylor Marshall, the Coalition for Canceled Priests. All of these guys, I think, are great. Father Lovell of the Coalition Canceled Priests. I've had them all on my podcast. Would love to have them again. They've much more focused on the corruption and the injustice of the dismissal from the clerical state of Pavone. I get that. And I'm not going to, I understand why they're focused on that. I do think there's other aspects we need to focus on. And I think that's important. But this is an area where I understand we're going to have some disagreement. Now, the key issue here in my mind is this idea of vocation versus job and then obedience. Now, I have been on record multiple times in podcasts, in articles, talking about the problem of misunderstanding the virtue of obedience. I've talked to Peter Kwasniewski about this. I've written about myself. I've talked about it. I really do believe this is a key problem in the church today, that particularly after the Council of Trent, in response to the Protestant Reformation, the Protestant Revolution, and the rise of the Jesuits and some different reasons, there has been a misunderstanding of the virtue of obedience. Obedience is a virtue, but there's been a misunderstanding of it that has gotten to be very much in line with just simply blind obedience. If you're given a command, you do it. You have to do it. That's the most virtuous thing to do. That is not the teaching of the church for 2,000 years. See, Thomas Aquinas lays out very clearly that all obedience, except for to God directly, has limits. Only God can command total obedience. Every superior on earth, including the Pope, has limits on the authority that they have. And so I do think that is an issue. I am not one of these people saying, okay, we just have to obey. Church is corrupt, but our only response is obey. That's not what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is we understand this virtue of obedience, where authority is legitimately used and where it's illegitimately used. One of the big things that I think people need to understand is every authority in the church or in the world has a sphere of authority. I have a sphere of authority as a father to my children. And it only goes so far. For example, when my child is and it changes over time. My child is 5, I have a very large sphere of authority over my child. I can basically tell them when to go to bed. I can tell them what to eat. I can tell them just about almost anything. You never tell anybody to sin or anything like that. When my child is 25, however, that sphere is diminished greatly. I know this. I have a 25-year-old. I don't have the sphere of authority I used to. I can't tell them when to go to bed, for example. I mean, I can tell them that, but she doesn't have to listen to me. Rightly so. She's not disobeying in some sinful way if she goes to bed whenever she wants to. She lives in, 1,000 miles away too. It doesn't really matter what I think. So there is a sphere of authority. And often what we see in the church today, we do see church leaders trying to expand their sphere of authority. A classic case in my mind was when the bishops tried to tell us you can't receive the sacraments, go to mass without wearing a mask. That's not part of their sphere of authority to make health decisions and decide things like that. Canon law is very clear. If a Catholic goes to a cleric with desiring the sacraments, he has to say yes, at least maybe not immediately, like might say, oh, wait, let me finish this and I will do it. But essentially, as long as they're properly disposed, he has to give it to them. So therefore, there is this sphere of authority that has to be that exists. And so I'm not saying we obey all commands by all our church authorities, no matter what. I am saying, though, that there are legitimate commands. There is legitimate authority, and we do have to obey those. That's what separates us from the Protestants. That's what keeps us from having rogue priests. We don't want priests running around doing whatever they want. Yes, I get that most bishops are terrible today, but the fact of the matter is that it's far worse to have priests running around doing whatever they want. We've seen the celebrity priests that this has happened to. Father Carapi is the first one that comes to mind. But there's been others who these priests get very too big for themselves. They get public, they get too big, their head gets too big, and they don't obey legitimate authority. And in my mind, based upon what we've seen, what we know, and I admit there's some things we might not know, it is absolutely legitimate for a bishop to reassign a priest. It is absolutely, that is part of their, even an evil bishop who is still in place has that authority to reassign. Now, ideally, of course, a bishop would go about the proper procedure for doing this, would take in consideration a bunch of factors, including the priest's own desires, would be charitable about it, would be clear about it. All these things in an ideal world is how it would work. That's usually not how it works because, bishops are fallen, priests are fallen. You do your best. Here in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, we had a major reshuffling where almost every single priest was reassigned last year. And essentially they knew, okay, I have to do it. I know priests in this diocese that weren't always happy with their new assignment, but they just said, well, that's what being a priest is, a diocesan priest is. When I'm assigned somewhere, I go there. That's part of the vocation. And so the fact that Zurich and Egan ask Pavone to be reassigned to a parish assignment and to stop full-time pro-life ministry, I believe that's a legitimate command. I don't see how you can argue it's not. I don't think it's a good command. I think he'd do much better work, in my mind, if he had been doing pro-life work full-time rather than a parish assignment. But God rewards our faithfulness. That's the important thing to remember is when the unfaithful attack us, we cannot be unfaithful in response. We just simply can't do that. We have to also be faithful to things that are hard, to things that are not easy. Now, one of the things I've noticed in a lot of the debates for the past couple of years about the obedience question. People love to throw out the Padre Pio example. And I think 99 times out of 100, it's an illegitimate example. Lay people, for example, are not under any vows, any promises to obey anybody, really. I mean, we have a certain level of obedience to church authority, things like that, but not like a priest or a religious at all. And so the Padre Pio example of him obeying his superior, his religious superiors, when they told him basically to shut it down, you know, that's not comparable to a lay person having to wear a mask at mass. That's just ridiculous to think that that's apples and oranges. However, I think the Padre Pio example actually applies here, because Padre Pio was doing beautiful work, was helping souls, and his superiors told him to stop. And yet he continued to do it. I mean, I'm sorry, he obeyed. He obeyed out of faithfulness, even if he would be, even though he was doing this good work. And we look at that as saintly today. And I think the same thing does apply in this case to Pavone. That yes, he was doing great work in the pro-life world. Nobody's disputing that. But God doesn't need him in the pro-life world. That's something important to remember. It's something I remember when I was doing pro-life work. God didn't need me. He doesn't need Frank Pavone. He doesn't need anybody. He doesn't need Abby Johnson. He doesn't need Lila Rose, any of the pro-life leaders. He doesn't need any of them to make his things happen. And so the idea that we just have to have Frank Pavone as one of the pro-life leaders, I think is erroneous. It's just not true. If God wants to use Pavone in a different way, that's his right to do that. If he wants to raise up another priest as a leader of Priests for Life or in the pro-life movement, he can do that. Do we think he can't do that? Nobody is necessary to do certain work. I mean, his vocation comes first. Our vocation comes first. But the actual work we do, none of it really matters in the grand scheme of things. It's all a matter of God's grace and God's providence of whether or not where he puts us. If God were to, you know, like, for example, Crisis Magazine does not need me. I am not some essential part of Crisis Magazine. What really needs to happen is that we all are faithful to the state of life that we've been put in. And I just question whether or not in this situation that Pavone has been faithful to that. Okay, so again, I'm going to finish with this. I think we need to go, we need to understand that acknowledging that persecution is happening against faithful Catholics within the church is one thing, and it's very true. I mean, you can't look at my writings and my podcast and not realize I recognize that very clearly. I've condemned it. I have talked about it. I've talked about resisting the Pope and the Vatican when necessary. That is very true. But our reaction, we have to still be clear. We still have to maintain the most important aspects of being a Catholic. We need to maintain the perennial traditional teachings of the church. And the perennial teachings of the church is that a priest has to obey, in most cases, his legitimate superior when it comes to assignments. And I don't see that happening in this case. So I think what we need to do is we need to fast and pray for the church. We need to fast and pray for Bishop Zurich in this situation, because he seems to be the main driver against Pavone. And obviously, we need to fast and pray for Pavone, for Frank Pavone. We need to fast and pray for him. Absolutely, we need to. That whatever God's will is for him, that he would follow, that he would fulfill his one vocation, which is to be a priest. That's his sole vocation, and that he would fulfill that. And that obviously that this decision to laicize him would be reversed, that it would no longer apply, and he would go back to being a Catholic priest in good standing with the church. That's, I think we all need to do that. And I think if we're not willing to pray about it, if we're just going to talk about it, but we're not praying about it, not fasting about it as well, then really we should shut up about it. So, okay, I'm going to leave with that. I just think it's a sad situation. It's tragic. I understand there's a lot of emotions involved with it, but I think we need to really stick to our principles as Catholics, not become Protestants where we just basically say, okay, I'm going to dismiss all church authority no matter what, because it's all corrupt, all evil. I'm not going to listen to any of it. We just can't do that. We're Catholics. Okay, everybody, I'll wrap it up there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.